5 cheerleaders dead in 3 months. That's the dark cloud hanging over Monica Rayburn as she navigates her junior year of high school in Millbrook. Her sister Jennifer was the last to die. Suicide, they said, following the murders of Juliana Ruiz and Susan Berry and the car accident that claimed Bethany Williams and Colleen O'Connor. 5 years later, Monica's family has moved to a new house in an attempt to escape the shadow of what locals call the Street of Horrors, but some ghosts follow you no matter where you go. While searching for painkillers in her police officer stepfather Tom's office, Monica discovers something unsettling. 4 identical envelopes containing yearbook photos of the dead cheerleaders with their faces circled in red ink. Each bears the same cryptic message. I know it wasn't him. Connect the dots. The handwriting seems strangely familiar, and the implication is clear. Someone believes the wrong person was blamed for the cheerleaders' deaths. Jack Canning, Susan's neighbor, who Tom shot during an arrest attempt, might not have been the killer after all. The discovery of Jennifer's phone, concealed in Tom's locked desk drawer, propels Monica's investigation forward. The phone's security features are disabled and text messages erased, but the call log reveals an unknown number that contacted Jennifer hours before her death. When Monica texts this number, identifying herself as Jen's sister, she receives an ominous reply. Be careful. Some doors should stay closed. A meeting with crime journalist Daphne Furman exposes troubling inconsistencies. No bloody clothes were recovered despite Juliana's injuries, the Berry's security system showed no forced entry, and witness statements about suspicious vehicles were never thoroughly investigated. Following an anonymous tip, Monica finds a weathered envelope hidden in the wall of an unfinished house across the street. Inside is a note in Jennifer's handwriting reading, I'm not okay, they won't stop watching, and a response in block letters, I see everything you do. Later, she discovers a poem in her sister's copy of Wuthering Heights, written in the same meticulous handwriting, a stalker's manifesto documenting Jennifer's routine with disturbing precision. Ethan McCready becomes a person of interest. A troubled student, expelled for listing cheerleaders' names in his notebook, which administrators viewed as a hit list. When Monica questions Tom about Ethan, he dismisses her concerns, explaining that Ethan lacked the physical strength to strangle the victims. Flashbacks reveal Jennifer's complex relationship with Ethan. He once approached her after finding her note saying, "I'm not okay," showing unexpected kindness. Yet another incident showed his darker side when he responded to cafeteria bullying by making a gun gesture with his fingers. When confronted, Ethan admits to being the mystery texter and letter sender. He claims he witnessed Juliana arguing with someone in a hoodie the night of the murders while a dark pickup truck was parked nearby. He alleges Tom interrupted his police interview and threatened him. However, his story collapses when Monica realizes the Berrys had installed a privacy fence months before the murders, making it impossible for Ethan to have seen anything from the woods as claimed. With her friend Ginny Cordero's help, Monica examines yearbook photos taken before Juliana's murder. They notice Juliana initially smiling with friends, then retreating to the fence looking upset while checking her phone. This leads Monica to Carly Amato, a transfer student from Jennifer's final year. Carly reveals that Susan Berry saw Jennifer put something in Ethan's locker the same day Susan spotted Ethan writing his hit list, likely explaining the rift between Jennifer and Susan. However, other cheerleaders disclose that Carly desperately sought acceptance and exercised strange control over Juliana, boasting about parties with older men. Former cheerleading coach Allie Lewandowski clarifies another rumor. She never expelled Carly. Carly quit after Allie confronted her about finding Carly's earring in her boyfriend's car. The boyfriend claimed he and a friend bought beer for Carly, and the earring fell out in his back seat. This seemingly minor detail becomes crucial as Monica reconstructs the events preceding the murders. Flashbacks reveal Jennifer's concerns in her final weeks. She grew uneasy watching Juliana befriend transfer student Carly Amato, whom she'd seen behaving oddly at the county fair. During Spirit Night, Jennifer discovered Juliana and Carly outside discussing prescription pills. When a black pickup arrived, Juliana left with Carly and an unknown male driver despite Jennifer's silent alarm. While recovering from strep throat, Jennifer confronted Juliana about the incident. Rather than denying it, Juliana replied, "There's so much I have to tell you. It's not what you think." That same night, Ethan visited Jennifer and shared that his mother was dying. When he inquired about her troubles, Jennifer admitted feeling like she was losing her friends. After Juliana and Susan's murders, Jennifer attended Juliana's wake where she confronted Carly outside, blaming her for Juliana's death. Later, Jennifer sneaked to Ethan's house. Though they became intimate, Ethan stopped when he recognized her emotional vulnerability. Jennifer broke down, confessing she wished she had died too, as she was supposed to be with her friends that night. The investigation leads Monica to a shocking discovery. Brandon Mitchell, a 22-year-old substitute teacher who had briefly worked at her school, had formed an inappropriate relationship with Juliana. When Monica identifies a distinctive marking on Brandon's leg in a recovered photograph that matches evidence from the Barry residence, the pieces fall into place. During a confrontation at Monica's house, Brandon reveals his motive. Juliana had threatened to report his misconduct to authorities. His attempt to silence her led to a tragic confrontation that resulted in two deaths. The situation intensifies when Brandon becomes aggressive, but Ginny's timely intervention prevents further harm. At the police station, Detective Harrison presents the case details. The evidence supports multiple serious charges, including Brandon's recorded admission. The investigation reveals how a predatory individual exploited his position of authority, highlighting the importance of maintaining proper boundaries and reporting suspicious behavior in educational settings. After Brandon's arrest, Monica's life shifts dramatically. Rather than facing ridicule when his crimes become public, she receives genuine sympathy from teachers and students alike. She quits the dance team, not from trauma, but from recognizing she needs to create her own path instead of following Jennifer's. On Jennifer's death anniversary, Monica visits Osprey's Bluff, where Bethany and Colleen died. Standing at the edge overlooking the steep drop to dark waters below, she finally understands why Ginny had seemed so erratic during their investigation. A text from Ethan McCready arrives, "Maybe now I can let her go," perfectly capturing the bittersweet nature of closure. Monica decides to move forward, allowing herself to think about the girls less each day. Yet she knows complete forgetting isn't possible or desirable. Their stories have become part of her own. She learns that healing isn't linear. Some days, memories feel distant. Other days, they return with stunning clarity. Closure doesn't mean forgetting. Sometimes it means accepting that some questions remain unanswered, and moving forward means carrying both truth and uncertainty.